The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in, students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and joined by my two co-hosts today, Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. We got some college basketball, college football, and some NBA to get into. But first, this past weekend on Sunday, you had the roast of Tom Brady. Netflix marketed it as the greatest roast of all time. Guys, I don't know if y'all had the chance to sit down and watch the three-hour-long roast of Tom Brady, but have y'all at least seen some of the clips on social media of it?
Mm-hmm, of course. Who hasn't seen it yet?
any thoughts on what you saw on social media and what people were able to get away with some of the jokes?
Are we going to talk about, like, some of the outlandish shows, like, especially in today's culture where we stand as, like, a society, some of these jokes that definitely would not stand, but since this is the roast of Tom Brady, everyone can get away with it. It was just like free reign over everything. It was, but it made it good, is the thing. No one got offended.
Yeah, I think that was a good thing. Is you didn't see after the roast of Tom Brady, people or the big people on Twitter, the media people going, oh my God, this guy went way out of line or stuff like that. Twitter was mostly like, this is pretty funny. Barstool Sports was tweeting about it. There was tons of media people tweeting like, oh, this is hilarious. So I think it's a breath of fresh air that we were able to sit down and watch that roast and people not get overly offended by what people were saying. I mean, Tom Brady even made a 9/11 joke. So
yeah,
I think it was a breath of fresh air to have that roast and people not get easily offended by anything being said.
That's true. We've gotten a little soft recently, and the roasts
I haven't gotten soft.
We're much funnier, and it seemed like we kind of went back to that. You know, some of them were good, some of them were bad, but it was overall very funny.
Yeah, I think Nikki Glaser had the best of anybody in that entire roast. All right, let's move on to some college basketball here. Alabama got a big time transfer and Cliff Amore from Rutgers. Nathan, is this the most important and impactful transfer that Nato's got this cycle?
This was the missing piece to the entire team. I think you go back to last year's team and you immediately point out what's the main puzzle piece that they're missing. They were missing a rim protector. Constantly on this show, we talked about the absence of Charles Bediako on the team, how much of an impact he would have made on that team if he had stayed instead of going into the NBA draft. But then to get a guy like Cliff, just absolutely insane on the defensive end, especially with his rim protection, and he can make for some stuff on the offensive end when he gets the chance as well. So I think he was definitely the missing piece of this team. Not only that, but it allows Grant Nelson to play away from the five and play a more natural position at the four, where we kind of saw him play like against North Carolina, against teams like Clemson and against UConn, where he was able to play the stretch four position and have more free reign of the offense.
Right.
Yeah, this is absolutely huge. Nathan nailed it. It's the exact missing piece that Alabama needed. The defensive struggles that Alabama had this past year that they didn't have in the year before with Brandon Miller and Noah Clowney and those guys, where they were the number one overall seed going to the tournament. The defensive struggles that they had this past year came because they didn't have the rim protector behind them that they knew that they had in Charles Bediako the year before. They did not have that. You know, as athletic and big as Grant Nelson was, he was playing out of position, and he's not the rim protector that you need in the SEC and that most teams have in the SEC and that Alabama had in Charles Bediako. Now they do. They get a guy that's not only experienced, but he's a great rebounder, great rim protector, and you're not going to have to ask him to do a lot of post scoring and stuff like that. Especially if you get a guy like Mark Sears back, you're not asking him to go for 20 points a game. That's not his role. His role is going to be protecting the paint and getting boards on the defensive glass.
Great. After that commitment was announced, Jani Broom went on Twitter and said, "That's it with the question mark." Any thoughts on what Jani Broom was kind of alluding to there with this? That's it. He doesn't think that highly of Cliff.
Let him talk his talk. You know, Jani, he is an outgoing guy, and I would say he's not even the most talkative guy on our team this past year and the next year. I believe that would be Chad Baker Mazar, as we saw that with the ejection 3 minutes into the Yale game. But no, I think I think that was a little bit of they have seen each other. They have played against each other. There's one game in the NBA Combine last season where both of them were testing out the waters. Both of them returned to their schools. Cliff returned to Rutgers. Jahni returned to Auburn. And there was a clip that went out that was one possession of Cliff guarding Jahni, and Cliff had incredible defense. Jahni was at the end of the shot clock, had to fade away and missed a jump shot. And it was that clip got out there, and it was like, oh, we're going to be able to stop Jahni Broome now. We've got this guy that's just dominating. We're going to be able to stop him. Well, actually, the stats were found from that game. Jahni had 17 and 10, and Cliff had 3 and 3. So I think that was the more of a response to those tweets relative to just Cliff going to Alabama. But yeah, I'm excited for that matchup this year.
Nathan, I know you've seen him on Twitter with all these Auburn fans putting the per 40 stats of Dylan Cardwell and Cliff next to each other. What are your thoughts on the per 40?
I mean, I've been very vocal about it. I think the per 40 is a terrible analytics. I mean, like, you look at the statistics, you're acting like a guy will play 40 minutes every single game he plays. No guy in college basketball is going to play 40 minutes. So it is such an unrealistic stat line to have. And I mean, even like your star players, you say Mark Sears is going to go out there and play 40 minutes. He's not going to be Jalen Brunson, even though he looks like him and plays like him. He's not going to play that much time. That's just not how college basketball is. We have way deeper rotations. So I think the per 40 stat is a lot more misleading to a lot of people who look at that and say, hey, whoa, they could finish with that stat in 40 minutes if they played it. Why isn't he playing more? But things happen throughout the games. You go on cold streaks. Your opponent figures out how to play against you a little bit better. So you're not going to continuously have this same increase. It's going to be more like a roller coaster than anything else.
Yeah, I'd like to point out there was a guy under one of these Twitter posts that, or I guess X, what do you call them, X post or something,
Just call it
that had
Twitter.
put
Just call it
had put
Twitter. Just call it
the
Twitter.
had put the per 40 of Davin Cosby and JP Pegues next to each other, and Davin Cosby had the better per 40 stats. So I think that definitely reflects how illegitimate that
A
stat is,
stupid
like Nathan
stat.
said. It really is. It's just like it's more of like a justification for stupid arguments between people
That's
with
right.
sports. It's just like, oh,
That's
this
what
guy's
Twitter
better
is.
because yeah.
Stupid arguments.
I mean, there's some good arguments on there, but when people start bringing up per 40 stats to benefit people, it's like, all right, you've lost all credibility. All right, with the portal closing last week, guys, on Tuesday, which teams in college basketball ended up with the best portal class? Whether it be Alabama, Kansas, Indiana, I believe Arkansas ended up number one class in the transfer portal. So who ended up with the best?
You could say Kansas because not only did they get a great transfer portal class, they're also bringing in some studs as freshmen. They brought Hunter Dickinson back. You could say Kentucky because they had to go out and get everybody. They had to go out and get a bunch of people because they had no team. Everybody left, including their head coach. You could say Arkansas because Calipari brought everybody from Kentucky with him, and then he went out and got the number one transfer from FAU, John L. Davis. That's a huge pickup. But I think mine is going to be a new coach as well, taking over a new team. And I got to go with Michigan's class. I really, really like Michigan's class. I really like what Dusty May is doing up there. I think he is, he didn't get that superstar. He didn't get the John L. Davis. He didn't get the guy that's going to change his team next year. But he got what, six guys? They're going to come in and they've got to turn that thing around at Michigan. Juwan Howard put that thing in the dumpster fire after a successful year he had what, 5 years ago or something like that. And it's just been downhill from there. I really like Dusty May as a coach. I think he did a great job. Landed the Yale center Danny Wolf, got Sam Walters from Alabama. That's a stretch big. Got Trey Donaldson from Auburn. He's getting guys that not only have experience but also have experience at the Power Five level and at the highest level of college basketball. I think that's a big class.
Yeah, that's a good pull right there. I'm gonna go basic. I'm gonna say Arkansas. I mean, obviously, when we talked about John Calipari leaving for Arkansas, and we covered what he was gonna be able to do there, I think we all saw this coming with the transfer portal. Not only did he pull basically everyone from Kentucky that he already previously coached, he pulled some bigger names out of the portal like John L. Davis. I mean, I look at this Arkansas roster, and I obviously don't think it's anything polished or anything along those lines, but you look at the amount of talent they have and what they could probably put together there in Fayetteville, and I'm sure their fans got to be excited. The only thing is chemistry. Chemistry is the biggest thing. We talked about this a few years ago when Arkansas had one of the best transfer portal class, one of the best recruiting class. It kind of felt like it was just thrown together, and they didn't have any chemistry at all, and they kind of fell apart. And it's going to fall on Calipari to create some kind of chemistry between these teammates in order to have success in this coming year.
Yeah, for me, I think it's as much fun as we made of Mark Pope. I think Kentucky had the best transfer portal class. I know it's like, oh well, they had to have one of the best ones. Well, he went out and got a pretty good class. I think it was a good mesh of players. You look at the big men they got. They got Amari Williams from Drexel. He was a 3-time defensive player of the year in the CAA. He was the top shot blocker there. He's really a great rim protector. I think he was the best rim protector in this portal class. And then he adds somebody like Brandon Garrison, who was in a McDonald's All-American last year, to play alongside him or back him up. So you get two great rim protectors, but then you also add two great shooters and a guy in Kobe Brea, who was the best 3-point shooter last year in the nation. And alongside him, you get Kerr Carissa, who was he was above 40% from the 3-point line. You get Andrew Carr, who's a big stretch, a big man you can play alongside some people like Amari Williams and Brandon Garrison, who are not the best 3-point shooters in the world. Then you get a guy, athletic wing like Oweh from Oklahoma, really good athletic wing, really good at defense. He'll probably be the lockdown guy. You say, hey, Oweh, we need you to go lock down a Mark Sears or somebody else like that, and he can do that. He has the capability. And their biggest get to the media, I guess, was like a guy in Lamont Butler who had that game winner against FAU. But you look at his stats, and they were pretty horrendous last season. So I'm not as impressed with Lamont Butler stat wise, but I think he brings a necessary leader and a guy who has the NCAA tournament experience. He got that at San Diego State. He played the national championship game. So I think it was a necessary get for this team. And he adds the leader they needed with all these young guys like Brandon Garrison and Oweh. And I think Mark Pope did a great job meshing the archetypes of his players together, not just going, hey, let me pick this name out of a hat and this name out of a hat, and let's just throw this thing together. I think that he did an amazing job finding the right players and putting the puzzle pieces together for his first year in Lexington. All right, guys, moving on to some NBA here. The Los Angeles Lakers fired head coach Darvin Ham after 2 seasons, as well as the entire coaching staff.
What? No way. They did that?
After that first round loss to the Denver Nuggets, who are getting absolutely railroaded right now by the Minnesota Timberwolves at two down 2-0 after 2 home games. So, do you think the Lakers made the right decision here, making Ham the scapegoat and letting him go?
I don't know. I don't know. It's like no head coach outside of Eric Spoelstra has worked with LeBron James.
He even wanted Eric Spoelstra fired, but Pat Riley told him no.
Exactly. Let's stop blaming these head coaches. I don't think Darvin Ham's a top coach in the NBA, believe me, at all. Not even top 20. But I do not think we can blame Darvin Ham for this past Lakers season or the previous. I think this is entirely on the players, and specifically your captain, LeBron James. There's not been a head coach that has had sustained success with LeBron outside of Eric Spoelstra. And we can't blame the coaches anymore. It's obviously not him. He's tried 8 different ones, 3 different teams. I don't understand. They were so talented this year. They were not deep, but they were talented, and they just sucked. They just sucked. But we can't put that on Darvin Ham. I think Darvin Ham's going to be a head coach somewhere else. I think he's a better fit at a team that needs a head coach. A younger team, a team with more depth, a team that's probably needs better help on the defensive end.
Charlotte Hornets.
That would be completely fine with me. I would take Darvin Ham in a heartbeat because we're talking about Becky Hammon and J.J. Redick for the Charlotte Hornets. No. So, but it's all about fit for a guy like Darvin Ham. I think he's a good coach. I think he's going to be able to do it, but I don't know who else would fit with the Los Angeles Lakers with a guy like LeBron James. It just doesn't work.
Four coaches in the last 7 years, by the way, for Lakers.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Okay. I'm not gonna go. I'm not gonna go here and sit on the stand and defend Darvingham for the way he coached, because he is not a good coach at all. The way he coached certain games, he would just have his hands in his pockets. Like that's not being a coach. But I also know he was, probably wasn't the worst coach in the league. And he definitely didn't have an easy job. You look at what they did last year; they were able to make the Western Conference Finals, and play really, against a really talented Denver team, and they ended up getting swept. But you know they weren't expected to get there in the first place. And then you come into this season, and you end up playing the same opponent. So it's not like you don't have experience with that. The roster, there wasn't like a huge roster turnaround for the most part. You have some of the same guys in there. In fact, I think you improved in several positions. But what it comes down to, the Nuggets were just a better team yet again. They beat you 4-1, and they move on. You're sitting at home. And I both appearances were because you had to go through the play-in, if I'm not mistaken. So that's not the path a LeBron James team should be making. So I don't think Darvingham did a fantastic job of veteran coaching during the regular season. I know the Lakers had several injuries. I did not like the lineups he put out a lot of the time. Felt like he would just throw players out there and say, go score. And it wouldn't happen because they didn't have any chemistry as a team. They relied a lot on guys like Anthony Davis to score, and of course LeBron, and then even with D'Lo, I think D'Lo was the biggest X factor during the season, and he had a great regular season, but when it got to the playoffs, he just disappeared. And you can't really depend on that. The bench players, the people who were supposed to be these 3-and-D guys, just kind of disappear in the playoffs. I don't think you can really expect that. But what it comes down to, I think LeBron James as a player, and as a leader, have not been the same since he came from, I would say, second stint in Cleveland, or if you go back to Miami, it just felt like he has just tried to take over every single team he has been on and outshined everyone on that team. And I get it, it's LeBron James. Like, he's one of the best players of all time. But what it comes down to is you gotta know that you're on the same level as everyone else that is on the court. You cannot be in the spotlight. You can't be on national television, basically just absolutely talking about something that doesn't matter. He was a distraction for the entire team. You go back to the bubble, I think he was a distraction, even though they won a championship that year. There are just several things that he wants to act like he's knowledgeable in and talk about, and he wants to be the social justice warrior, and it doesn't really work. It takes away from the team. It's a huge distraction. I don't think people talk about that enough. But then you go back to this year, and everyone is always just worried about, oh, where is he gonna go play next with Bronny? When is he gonna retire? How many points can he score this season? No one is concerned with the success of the team. Everyone is always concerned with the success of LeBron James himself, and that's why whatever team he will be on next, whatever team he will be on moving forward, will not succeed, because everything will revolve around LeBron James, and it will not work.
Yeah, I think Darvin Ham getting the boot here and being labeled the scapegoat is the reason he's the reason they lost this series. He's the reason they didn't make it farther in the postseason. I think it's absurd. It's not his fault. D'Angelo Russell went 0 for in a game in the Denver Nuggets series. It's not his fault. He cannot make a shot. It's not his fault that the roster construction was just thrown together. You look at their wing defenders. I mean, you're trying to put Austin Reaves on Jamal Murray. I'm sorry. Austin Reaves, I think, is a really great player. But he is not going to lock down Jamal Murray like you think he's going to do. I mean, you look at the Timberwolves right now, they have Jaden McDaniels and Naw on him. So it's like a whole different world right here. And their bench for the Lakers, it was just thrown together. Oh, let's get Gabe Vincent. Let's go get Cam Reddish. Let's get Jackson Hayes. None of those guys were impactful in that Denver series whatsoever. Jared Vanderbilt, I know he dealt with injuries all season. I think at one point in that series, Taurean Prince was the only bench player that scored a single point. So once again, it's not Darvin Ham's fault that his roster and his players cannot go out on the court and provide production for him. Now, granted, he did not have the greatest lineups at times. He did not do the great with matchups. But when he's given a roster of thrown together misfit toys, you cannot expect him to go out there and win you an NBA championship. LeBron James is not 25 years old. He's not going to go 26, 27 years old. He is at the twilight of his career. He probably has 2 years left max in the NBA. Anthony Davis, he's good, but you can't just rely on Anthony Davis 24/7 to get you points. You got to have a third option, and I don't think Russell or Austin Reeves are a third option on a championship winning team. They're just not. They may be a fourth or fifth option, but it has been proven the past two postseasons that you cannot rely on those guys when the lights get bright and you need a shot, and LeBron James is getting guarded by the best defender on that team. Anthony Davis can't hit the shot that day. Okay, Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, get me a shot. They can't. They've proven they can't. So once again, it's not Ham's fault that the roster he was given was not good. As I know LeBron James and Anthony Davis are really great players, but outside of that, not a good roster. So I think him getting the boot for I don't know who they're gonna hire. They wanted to get Tyronn Lue. Looks like he's gonna get extended. Jason Kidd got extended earlier this week. So I'm not sure who they think they're gonna get to come in and be their replacement for Darvin Ham. Did they get Mike Budenholzer? I mean, Darvin Ham came from the Mike Budenholzer tree. So you're just getting a similar coach to Darvin Ham. Granted, Mike Budenholzer did win an NBA championship as a head coach with the Milwaukee Bucks. Do you get a J.J. Redick? I think J.J. Redick is
No.
extreme. I think he's an extremely knowledgeable person about the game of basketball. He's very well spoken. But do you want J.J. Redick, who's going to be a first-time NBA head coach, to be your head coach? Do you think he's an improvement over Darvin Ham? I don't know if he is. I've never seen him coach an NBA game. So I don't think you go out and get a rookie NBA head coach to replace Darvin Ham and think, oh yeah, this is going to be a major upgrade. We're going to get over the hump in the West. Do you go get a Monty Williams somehow? Does he get released from his contract in Detroit? I think Brian Windhorst said that's a possibility. Do you get a Terry Stotts or a Kenny Atkinson, both assistants? I mean, at any point, were those guys upgrades over Darvin Ham? I think Mike Budenholzer probably is, but like I said, him and Darvin Ham are very similar type head coaches, more defensive. So I don't understand this firing from the point of view of, hey, who's going to come in and be better head coach? It just doesn't make sense for me. I hope Darvin Ham gets a second chance because the Lakers' job is the hardest job in the NBA, regardless of success you have. I mean, Frank Vogel won an NBA championship, and then he got one more season, and he was gone. So there is a very short leash in LA if you do not win year one. So I pray for the next head coach, whoever it is, that they find success in LA. But the way this roller coaster ride carousel at head coach is going, we might see them for 2 or 3 years and they're going to be gone, regardless if LeBron's gone. I think when LeBron retires, his head coach might be gone within the next year, unless he's doing something amazing and he's winning 60 games a year or something. Staying on the LeBron James track here, Bronny was selected as one of the 78
Oh,
players, in my
there it
opinion,
is. There it
in the
is.
2024 NBA Draft Combine over people like Jaden Ledee, who was the Karl Malone Award winner for the best power forward in college basketball and was an All-American. You had Caleb Love. Auburn's Jalen Williams wasn't invited. Judah Mintz, Walter Clayton, Aaron Estrada wasn't invited. Jared Stevenson, Eric Dixon from Villanova, Eric Gaines from UAB. I mean, there's a huge list of people that have far better stats than Bronny James, have far better accolades than Bronny James, other than their last name being James being related to LeBron. What are your thoughts on Bronny being selected as one of the 78 players over some of those guys? Considering his stats, I mean, you see them right there. 4.8 points per game, 2.8 rebounds, 2.1 assists, 0.2 blocks per game, 0.8 assist or 0.8 steals, below 40% from the field, below 30% from three. I mean, what was the NBA thinking here?
Greg, do you want to start? Or do you
Done
want me to go
silence.
ahead to
The
go?
guy shot 36% from the field and 27% from three. Are we kidding here? What are we doing? Yes, his last name is James. Yes, he will probably be drafted because some stupid NBA franchise is going to think they're going to get LeBron James if they draft his horrible son. Look, Bronny would have done so much better going into the transfer portal, staying at USC, maybe actually starting this year, doing something productive. on the offensive or defensive end. People forget, he scored almost 5 points a game, but he was horrific on the defensive end. You know who had a field day with him? KD Johnson had a field day with Bronny James when USC came to Auburn. I believe KD had 12 or 13 just on Bronny James. It was that bad. This is ridiculous, but it's not even the fact that he was invited. If he was the last guy invited and they had gotten everybody else, that they could possibly think of that had success in college at all, bring him in. But he was picked over an All-American, Jaden Ledee. That dude's going to be an
Absurd.
NBA player. Bronny
Ridiculous.
James is not. That's so stupid. That's so stupid. And guys with potential, like Caleb Love, like Isaiah Stevens, like Jalen Williams, like Aaron Estrada, like Walter Clayton Jr., like guys that had success for multiple years in college. Speechless. Speechless. That was so stupid.
I'm just like so fatigued from sitting here and talking about Bronny James. I'm tired of talking about LeBron James. Not a fan of either. I've made that very clear. Bronny James is just not a good player. He
No.
is not. He was not college ready. And he was thrown into a terrible situation at USC. I get that. But instead of developing or trying to play a certain role, it felt like he was just trying to do everything at once, and he never capitalized on anything good. People talked about him being this Nets great defender. I never saw it. I felt like he struggled in every single matchup he had. I there was some story where he would be a so I think LeBron might have said it, that he would have been a valuable starting asset on an NBA franchise. What is he talking about? What I'm sorry, what did we see?
Which NBA franchise?
The Detroit Pistons?
Who is gonna go out there and shoot 36% from the field and 26% from three and say, yeah, let me go ahead and keep letting him do this. Let's give him all the shots here because he's gonna make them eventually. Is that what we're saying? I'm saying college basketball is a very, very hard sport. It is very talented all around. But if you cannot go out there and make an open shot, I mean, I can go and play a pickup game of basketball and have better statistics than this against people who are actually probably pretty good. So, I mean, the inefficiency from the field, especially from three, and then when you talk about the free throw line, the free throw line is what bugs me the most. Those are free points. It's not like you are in college. How do you not have a good free throw routine to where you can consistently knock down free throws at what, an 80% clip? That would be respectable.
He's a guard too.
He's
Yeah.
a guard. It's
He's
not
a
like he's
big
a big
man.
man. Exactly. It's just awful. His stats are awful. But the fact that he was invited to the combine over all these guys just shows how swayed everyone is by the fact that his last name is James and that he is a LeBron James son. And that's the awful thing. Greg, you mentioned it. All of those great players who did not receive an invite, who worked very, very hard throughout college, spent several years trying to make a name for themselves, and they are just going to be taken. They're going to be taken over by a guy who can't even shoot the three ball well. What a day and age we live in. And he will get exposed at the combine. I can't wait to see him in the 5v5 pickup because that will basically tell the whole story for you. I don't know if they'll even let him do that. I think to save him some draft stock, but whatever draft stock he does have, they'll probably say, "Hey, sit this one out, champ. We don't need to see anything else from you."
Let
Oh
me
God.
read your definition of nepotism here, guys. The practice among those with power or influence of favoring relatives, friends, or associates, especially by giving them jobs. Nepotism. I think that's what this perfectly describes the situation. He's related to LeBron James. If we take away his name being LeBron James Jr., and let's say his name is John Smith or something like that, and he had these stats and he played at USC, do you think he would have received an invite to the NBA draft combine? Do you think? No. Okay.
Chance.
There's absolutely zero chance he was. No, I want to say Bronny did have that heart condition scare in the offseason at USC. So he did get a late start there with the Trojans, but his stats are not good. I don't think coming into USC, he was going to be a one and done player. As I know people said, hey, he was going to come in, he's going to do great things, he's going to go to the NBA draft, get drafted in the first round and go play with LeBron. I never saw that. I don't think when we talked about him earlier in this, when we did the podcast back in the day, we said he was going to do that. He is more of a, hey, he needs to be a 3, 4, maybe even 5 year guy in college basketball. He needs to develop. He needs to learn. He needs to learn under a good head coach, a good coaching staff. I don't think you can rush Bronny James to this NBA. Like Nathan said, when they play that 5-5 thing, he is going to get exposed. He's going to get exposed by these good dominant guards, whether it be a Mark Sears or some of these like a Rob Dillingham or some of these top guards in this draft. He will get exposed by them. If you get guard Katie Johnson, I mean, forget it. Mark Sears and Rob Dillingham and all these other guards will make him look silly. He'll be running circles around them. I mean, there's just no way about it. I just don't understand Bronny James getting invited when you have an All-American and Jaden Liddy sitting there. I think that's the biggest thing. Like Gray said, if it had been like, hey, he's the 78th guy, we have all these great players here, and it's just like, I mean, it's just some of these lower-level guys. I've been fine with Bronny James getting an invite. When you don't invite a guy like Jaden Liddy and Mountain West Player of the Year a couple of years ago in Isaiah Stevens, a guy in Walter Clayton Jr. who proved at Florida he is a very good guard. Caleb Love, I know he had his struggles at times, but the shots he hit in his career and how much impact he had on the two teams he played for. Jalen Williams. I mean, Jalen Williams, even though he is an older prospect, he's better than Bronny James last year. I mean, so it's just nepotism at its finest showing. I don't agree with Bronny James getting invited. I don't think he should be drafted. His stats don't show he could be. I think he has some potential, but I think he could benefit from going back to college and playing. I think it's rumored he would play at Duquesne under LeBron James' former high school teammate, Drew Joyce. So I think that'd be beneficial for him to learn under that and just develop. He is a developmental player. He's not polished. So I think coming back to college is his best decision, but I don't think he will. I think he'll stay in this draft and he'll get drafted by whoever it is, if it's the Lakers, the Cavs, I mean, whoever wants to try to get LeBron, they'll take a chance on him because, hey, we get LeBron for a year or two. I just, this is angry because if I was in Jaden Ledee's shoes, I'd be pissed. I'd be like, dude, I was on an All-American. I was on a national championship team at San Diego State. I won the Karl Malone Award. What else do I need to do? Do I need to change my name to Jaden James or something and be related to LeBron James? It's disappointing on the aspect of the NBA to show this type of nepotism towards Bronny.
I'm sorry, Bronny wouldn't make an LA Fitness roster at this current moment. Much
Those
less
guys can
a,
play.
yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. He would not make the roster for
Those guys would bully a guy like Bronny.
it. Especially the old heads in there, man. They would destroy Bronny. All right, let's move on to our last thing here today, the Deion story. It surfaced last week. Former Colorado player Xavier Smith had an interview with the Athletic. He had some comments towards Deion. He said he was destroying guys' confidence and belief in themselves. The way he did it, he could have been done with a little more compassion. I was actually getting mad, like tears coming to my eyes, because bro, you never even even try to get to know me. He told him that Sanders told him he should probably hit the portal, and he didn't want him to waste a year thinking he could earn a spot. That's not the end of the story though, because once that was posted, then Shadur went on social media on Twitter and tweeted, "I don't even remember him, to be honest. Probably had to be very mid at best." And then his teammate, now at Austin Peay, chimed in and he tweeted that he had better stats than Shilo Sanders. And then Deion Sanders came in and posted the stats of this guy's teammate and said, low Jesus. I mean, I didn't have a problem with the first part of Deion saying, hey, you really don't have a spot here. I think you hit the portal. I think that's in his every right to say, hey, you're not gonna have a spot here. But then to go on social media and put these kids on blast is inexcusable. If Nick Saban or Kirby Smart would have done that, there would have been a huge issue. Huge. But it feels like Deion Sanders did it, and it's like, okay, it's fine. It's Deion. Any thoughts, guys, on what Deion and his son have done with Twitter and trashing these players?
Honestly, feel bad for every alumni and letterman of University of Colorado, because that's a good school, and they had a good football program, and they've proven it before in the past. They've had guys that they've brought into the NFL. They've had success. They've had down years. Obviously, the year before they hired Dion, they went what, 2-10. They're up and down. I feel bad for them because they get to watch this circus that Dion is putting on in Boulder right now. It's a circus. That's ridiculous. And here's my thing with Shedeur Sanders. I'm super excited to play the college football game coming out in July. I think NIL is a great thing in so many aspects. It gives players a chance to support their families. It gives players a chance to make money on their name in their way that they want to, and have success in other things besides the football field as well, before getting to the NFL. I think it promotes players to come back to college and get their degree. Well, they could still make money and support their families before they go to the pros. I like that. Here's the problem with NIL, is you've got these kids who are now making millions of dollars at the age between 18 and 22, who not only don't deserve to make that money because Colorado went 3-9 last
Four
year,
eight.
4-8, 4-8 last year.
Close enough.
Close enough, yeah. Didn't make a bowl.
Exactly. But now you've given these kids like a ego and all the confidence in the world because they're making money, because these smart businesses are like, oh, they've got 400,000 followers. Heck yeah, I want to work with them. So I understand it from a business standpoint, but it's becoming an issue. It's becoming an issue because we got people bashing their own teammates on the social media apps because they can't see past their own shoelaces. And it's ridiculous. And it's sad. And I really, really am sad for those people who support the University of Colorado, not just their football program, but that university, because it's a circus and your head coach is making it worse and supporting it. And it's sad, really.
Well, I wish we didn't have to talk about this today. I really do. Look, I forget what time last year we sat here and talked about Dion whenever he took over Colorado and just said, hey, whoever's a 3-star and below, go ahead and get out. Go ahead and get out. You're not gonna play, you're not gonna have a chance to play, you're not gonna sniff the field. Go and get out. Don't come talk to me. I don't care who you are. We talked about that. We talked about how disrespectful that was, how awful he treated these student athletes who already put in all this hard work at Colorado originally. And these stories just keep coming out of different ways he has destroyed these guys' careers, basically. I mean, we talked about Xavier Smith. He was a D1 defensive back before having to go down to the FCS. Because he was just kicked off the team because Deion said, you know what? I don't see anything in you. Go ahead and leave. You're not even gonna change my mind at all. Doesn't even give the man a chance. And then I think what makes it worse is the fact that Chidur has no respect for any of his teammates because he is on such a high horse because he is making so much money from NIL because of who his dad is, and because of all these different relations that he has. It's horrible. He just does not treat anyone with respect. And I don't see how anyone on that Colorado team, if I had to play for a coach like that, I don't think I could handle it. I'm sorry. And there must be no team chemistry. I mean, you talk about the favoritism that Dion shows constantly to his son, and how he tries to promote. It's more like a business at this point to him, where he's just trying to constantly promote his son. He doesn't care about football. He doesn't care about winning. It was pretty obvious last year when they went 4-8. I know they started off decent, and everyone thought they were going to be the next best thing, and then they fell off the face of the planet because Deion Sanders is not a good football coach. He is more concerned with making money. And this has all been an entire smoke show. And you are right, Gray, to talk about the alumnus of Colorado and how sorry we should feel for them, because this is absolutely degrading to a school like Colorado, who, like you said, has a rich history of good college football and good people who have been put into the NFL and done really great jobs. It makes me sick to see the way that Dion, how Dion is treating these guys who are frankly still kids.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Now, I want to say the things Dion does where he's making these his student athletes go to class, sit in front of the class, be leaders in the classroom, and he gets these updates from these teachers. I think it is a great thing because it holds these kids accountable. He holds them accountable when he does that. And I think he has the right to tell players, hey, I think he has the right to tell players you're not going to have a spot next year.
Because
But
that's the business.
apparently the way he's wording it is not good. Like, there could be a better way to tell somebody, hey, you're not going to have a spot here. Go hit the portal. I think there's a better way to word that to an athlete, like, hey, we have X, Y, and Z in front of you. I really don't see playing time for you this year. Maybe 2 or 3 years down the road, you might get playing time. If you don't want to wait and you don't want to sit behind these guys, maybe you should go ahead and hit the portal and see what you can find out there. And if you don't like what you see, you're welcome to come back and we'll have you with open arms. I think it's a much better thing than saying, hey, go to hit the portal. You don't have a spot here. And then going on Twitter and saying, "Lo, Jesus." He's handled this transfer portal and his roster very poorly. And I don't know. I think the title of today's later part of the show should be nepotism. Because, like I pointed out, there is huge favoritism towards Shedeur Sanders and Shiloh Sanders. If a starting quarterback went on Twitter and did this to a former teammate and tweeted, I don't remember him, bro. It was probably mid at best. If he did that with Nick Saban as his head coach, Nick Saban would probably suspend the guy, or there would be some sort of reprimanding for that player. But because it's Shedeur Sanders, it feels like there's no issue, there's no punishment or anything from going on Twitter and doing that because his dad followed him up and did the same thing. And for the Sanders, I think that's okay to go on Twitter and bash these players. It is absurd. There's no reason you should feel that is necessary when somebody says that about you to go on Twitter and start bashing him or his teammate. It just doesn't feel right. Can you imagine if somebody went on Twitter for Shedeur and did that? What would Dion think? I think he needs to put himself in these parents' shoes and these players' shoes before he's out there and tweets about these players being bad or stuff like that. I mean, you look at Xavier Smith. He was a freshman All-American in the FCS. It wasn't like he was some slouch. Caleb Mathis over here tweeting that he was doing better than him. Okay, well, you got 38 receiving yards last year, which is something that Jaheim Ward, who was his teammate or Smith's teammate last year, tweeted about, and then that's what Dion followed up with, "Lord Jesus." So I think Dion's handled his situation in Colorado very poorly. Like I both pointed out, it's a huge circus up there. It seems like it's all about Dion and the Sanders. It's not about Colorado. It's Dion Sanders show. Might as well make it. I mean, it's already an Amazon Prime series, isn't it? The what is it, Prime or something like that? So it's all about Dion. It always has been about Dion. We pointed that out when he was hired there. And I think it's interesting that Dylan Edwards, who's a running back who played under Dion in his when he was younger. I think he was Dion coached when he was in Little League. And the fact he transferred out of there and Dion brought in different guys, that should be a red flag immediately. Like, this guy, he played under Dion when he was a little kid, and now he's not wanting to play for Dion anymore. And then you have Kamani McLean hitting the portal, who was Dion's big get last year out of the freshman class. So I think there's a lot of red flags with Dion. And I don't see Dion lasting much longer in Boulder, Colorado, if he can't win games and he continues to make it all about him. And it's just a whole circus. As much as he brings publicity to that team, I wouldn't want to put up with it, put up with that if I was the AD or the anybody associated with that school. It's just a big issue.
Yeah,
Gray,
you look
are
at
you?
coaches that have had success, sustained success at their programs, even recent. And you talk about Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, the Jim Harbaughs, the Kalen DeBoer at Washington, Steve Sarkisian at Texas, Mike Norvell at Florida State. Any coach, I mean, you can even talk about coaches that maybe aren't having success yet. The players always talk so highly about their coaches because they are a player's coach. That's what wins games. That's what builds chemistry, not just, in the locker room, but also on the field. They always talk so highly about the coach because they love their coach. Their coach loves them. They're best friends with their head coach. And all their assistant coaches love them too. And they love them. You don't see that at Colorado because it's all about money and it's all about clicks. I forget who it was. They transferred out. I'd rather play for a winning program instead of playing for clicks. That's what Colorado is now. That's why I feel so sorry for the alumni and the lettermen of the University of Colorado because they played for wins. They played for the name across the front of their chest instead of, social media clicks and money. It just sucks. It really sucks.
Do you think Auburn dodged a bullet not hiring him?
Absolutely. When we fired Brian Harsin, it was a lot of the side of Auburn that wanted Hugh Freeze or wanted experienced Southeastern Conference coach, because that was the problem with Brian Harsin. He wasn't a fit. He was a good X's and O's coach. We saw this with his Boise State success, but come on, he wasn't no SEC coach. But the side that wanted Deion Sanders thought that he was a player's coach. That was the pull to him. Because at Jackson State, that's what he was. He was just a player's coach. He was like, yeah, come be my guys. And let's go play. We're playing in HBCU. We're just gonna dominate. That's not who he is at Colorado. I think Auburn got exactly who they needed in Hugh Freeze. So we're good.
I think at the end of the day, my biggest worry is by the time that everyone realizes that Sanders is not a good coach, he will have run that program into the ground and the reputation of Colorado will be ruined and no one will want to touch that coaching job within a 10-foot pole. And it's something that Colorado has done. They didn't expect all this when they hired him. But the fact that he has treated this like he has, it's just continuously been this downhill spiral. And at what point do you pull the plug? I know we're talking about like success as a coach, of which obviously he hasn't had. He has had one season, but the way he continues to treat student athletes and the way he represents the University of Colorado has been very poor.
Do y'all think that because it's Deion Sanders and we're talking about Colorado right now. We wouldn't be talking about Colorado 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, he's brought that program back into the spotlight. I know he doesn't have success, but he's brought in NIL money, I'm assuming, because it's Deion Sanders and the people we've seen at the football games. So, do you think that Colorado's just going to have him stick around until the very end and sort of like throw these things to the side and say, it's Deion Sanders. Look what he's done to our program. We're Colorado. We can't get much better. I mean, we've seen them be much worse. I mean, do you think Deion sticks around here until he says he wants to go rather than Colorado saying it's time to go?
I don't know. That's just stuff. Goodness gracious, that's such a tough decision to make as an athletic director and as an administration of a university, because he has brought them into the spotlight. 2 years ago, Colorado was 2-10. They were terrible. They were an automatic win for any Pac-12 team. That's who they were. We've seen them be better in the past, but that's who they were at that time. And Dion came in and put them in the spotlight, brought in a lot of money and a lot of, fan interest. He hasn't brought them success, but I do think the administration of the University of Colorado needs to take a step and go, whoa, how do we want our program to be looked upon? You know, Nathan said just a second ago, you know, when Dion leaves or when they fire him, nobody's going to want that job because Colorado is going to have that reputation. It's just like the Lakers we were talking about earlier. Nobody's going to want that Laker job. Why would you go take a Laker job if I'm an up and coming head coach? You know, I've had success at a mid-major, you know, or something like that. I have 2 or 3 years of success, you know, top team, top programs are looking at me. And I've got a Rutgers job, an Indiana job, a Kansas job, and a Colorado job. The most money's at Colorado. But Colorado would be absolute last on my list because of that, because of the expectations and where that program was put from Deion Sanders. And I think the administration at the University of Colorado needs to take that step and look at, is this the right direction where we want to go? Is this where we want to put our program in 10, 15 years? Because that's not going to be successful, especially now, especially nowadays. So I think they need to pull the plug as soon as possible.
Wow, as soon as possible, so tomorrow.
Yes, if they can, that'd be great. Go get a good head coach, Colorado. Y'all deserve it.
That could win games.
Yeah.
All right, so that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.